Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. We fell in love with the old-time radio show The Magnificent Montague, the stage actor who turned into a radio personality. Here is our third installment called Aunt Agatha.
American Radio Theater presents a recreation of an old-time radio show. It's The Magnificent Montague, and the episode is Aunt Agatha, directed by Dan Schindler, produced by Joy Jackson. The National Broadcasting Company presents The Magnificent Montague. Edwin Montague. The Magnificent Montague, or, as he modestly puts it himself, the greatest Shakespearean actor on the stage today, is a broken man. This paragon of the legitimate theater, this thespian star who sneers at anything not connected with the theater, this man today is in radio, thanks to his wife, Lily Boehm, his one-time leading lady, Montague. The King Lear and Macbeth of yesteryear is today Uncle Goodhart, a hero of an afternoon radio serial. It is the morning after his first program, and he is sound asleep, happy in the thought that the whole thing was a horrible dream. But his wife Lily is up and determined to keep him in radio. The phone is ringing in the Montague apartment. Agnes, their maid, will answer.
Okay, don't blow your top. This is the residence of Edwin Montague and Miss Lily Boehm.
May I speak with Mr. Montague?
What? Mr. Montague? He's asleep.
I'm sorry, but could you please wake him?
What? Wake him up? And me with no accident insurance?
Look, this is important. Could you please give him a message?
Yeah, sure.
Please tell him that Mr. Malone, the station publicity man, is coming over. I need to take some photos of him. I'll be there shortly.
Yeah, okay.
Who was that, Agnes?
Yeah, some publicity man from the radio station. They're coming right over to take some publicity photos.
But, Agnes, I just got him up. He's got another program today. Can you see Montague having breakfast with strangers looking on?
Well, if they can stomach it, he can.
No, Agnes, we've got to help Edwin through this crucial period. He's doing something entirely new. He's working.
The Magnificent Montague working? This is going to throw the Unemployment Insurance Act right out the window. The whole program was built around him.
Agnes, I'm so proud of him. It's unbelievable. Edwin Montague up at 8 o'clock in the morning. A working man.
A working man. Labor needs him like they need the 7-day work week.
Agnes, you'd better get his breakfast ready. He should be ready soon.
Yeah, well, what stage is he at?
His calisthenics.
Ah, what a routine. Every morning he gets up. A half hour later, his eyes open. Then a slow shower. He combs his beard, and then he does his calisthenics. And then he tones up his voice like King Tut coming back to life.
Yow.
And they're off at Rockingham.
Hurry, Agnes. He's exercising his throat.
Yow.
And here we go again, roaming the hills.
I roam the hills of Golden Bough.
Hurry, here he comes. Good morning, darling.
I roam the hills, yow.
Good morning, Lily.
Good morning, darling. How is our radio star this morning?
Lily, don't be revolting.
Ah, here comes Agnes with your breakfast.
Good morning, Uncle.
Oh, you're here. This morning I had the most wonderful lingering dream. I dreamt that on your way to work you were struck by a Steinway concert grand piano dropped from the 14th floor of Carnegie Hall.
You're so sweet.
Now, no arguments at breakfast. Just imagine, Edwin, you having breakfast in the morning just like everyone else. Here, drink this.
Oh, what is this dank, insipid liquid?
It's orange juice.
Orange juice? I've never heard of it.
It's the juice of oranges squeezed into a glass.
Why must you be the first to try out every new fangled concoction on me? What am I, a guinea pig?
No, but you're getting warm.
Lily, would you order the domestic back to the scullery?
Agnes, take it away. Bring us cornflakes.
My what?
Cornflakes.
Corn? Corn? Wouldn't it be simpler to just turn me out into a pasture to graze?
Yeah, you said it, not me.
Corn? What am I, a swine?
Oh, let me answer that, please. I had my hand up first.
Agnes, please.
Life has become simple for me. I live but for one thing. Her day off.
Agnes, bring Edwin's coffee.
Okay, honey.
Lily, you have got to do something about Agnes. The minute I open my eyes in the morning, I become involved in guerrilla warfare. Lily, Agnes has to go.
Oh, don't be silly, Edwin. Agnes has been with us for 25 years.
Well, wouldn't it be wise to get rid of her while she still has some trade-in value?
Edwin, I've never seen you so irritable. Is something on your mind? Now out with it.
Lily, I didn't sleep a wink all night thinking about it. I'm not going back on that radio program.
Now, Edwin.
Lily, don't make me do it. Think about it when the theater lovers of tomorrow read about me in the Who's Who. Edwin Montague. Played Othello for David Belasco. Macbeth for Daniel Frohman. And Uncle Goodheart for NBC.
Edwin.
It's like asking Arturo Toscanini to play Goodnight Irene.
Edwin, we've gone through this already. You are going to stay in radio.
Radio? Oh, what a rogue and broken peasant fool am I.
Peasant slave.
Peasant slave am I.
Edwin.
Lily, sweetheart. I wanted to keep this from you, but...
What is it?
Lily, I am not a well man.
You're not?
I went to see Dr. Caldwell yesterday.
I know. He phoned me.
Did he mention anything?
Yes, he was furious. He never wants you to step into his office again.
Why not?
You know why not. Dr. Caldwell was a football player at Notre Dame. Today, at 35, he is in the prime of life, and yet every time he examines you and sees the perfect physical condition you're in, it leaves him green with envy.
That quack. I tell you, I'm a sick man.
But, Edwin, how can you be sick? In your entire life, you've never missed your 14 hours of sleep every night. You've never eaten anything except the finest food, and you've never been close enough to anybody to catch anything.
Oh, Lily, I tell
you... A sick man. Draft boards drool when you go by. Now stop acting like a baby. You're going to be on that program this afternoon.
No, not radio. I refuse to be a part of that electronic monster that killed the theater. Never!
Here's your coffee.
I hope it isn't poisoned.
Yeah, well, don't bet on it.
Now, Edwin, what is this nonsense about radio killing the theater?
Nonsense? Well, I read it in a theater magazine, where one afternoon radio program has 5 million listeners. It's called Aunt Agabah or something.
It's called Aunt Agatha. It's on from 3 to 3:30, Monday through Friday. Sponsored by Saperoni Soap. The soap that takes the guesswork out of romance.
You see what I mean? It's the idiot's delight. Do these people rush into the theater to see the plays of Shakespeare or Chekhov? No, it's Aunt Agatha. Aunt Agatha.
Now, you listen to me, Edwin Montague. I'm going to be frank. The last time you worked was 8 years ago in King Lear. That play lasted 2 performances, but for you, the curtain never came down. You are still taking bows.
Oh, Lily, anything but radio. I know. I'll try talking pictures. I understand they are perfecting them.
You have a contract for 8 weeks. The sponsor likes you. They are giving you $200 a week. Do you know what that means?
Yes, that I'm selling my soul for 30 pieces of silver. I'm sorry, Lily. I cannot do it.
Edwin, you have to. I refuse to stand by and watch you waste the rest of your life, dozing in your leather chair with those dreary hams of the Proscenium Club.
Oh, now it's my theatrical club. Go ahead, Lily. Plunge your knife into my back. Now twist it.
I don't mind your Proscenium Club, Edwin, but must you spend all your time there?
And with whom should I spend my intellectual evenings? Milton Berle?
Now, darling, I know they are your old friends.
Friends? They are comrades in arms, fellow soldiers, the thin red line of loyal defenders, keeping alive the last flickering flame of theatrical culture.
Why, that's rather good, Edwin. Where did you hear it?
Oh, at the club.
Oh.
Basil Hardwick said it to me in his denunciation speech against Cecil Banks.
So they threw Cecil Banks out of the Proscenium Club.
And why not? The turncoat, the renegade. He took a job in radio. Lily, if they ever find out that I, too, well, think about Benedict Arnold.
Oh, they can't find out. You're incognito on that radio program.
There can't be a word, not a hint. They can't know that Uncle Goodheart is Edwin Montague.
The publicity men are here.
Don't just stand there, bring the publicity men?
Now, Edwin.
This way, boys.
Okay.
There he is. Your friend and mine, Uncle Goodheart.
Hi, my name is Malone.
Yeah, if you want any cheesecake pictures, I'll be in the kitchen.
May I ask
you? I'll be with you in a minute, Mr. Montague. Okay, Harry, set that camera up in that corner. Do you mind if he moves the statue of that woman?
That woman is Mr. David Garrick.
Oh, that's cute. Okay, Harry, get everything set up and then go down to the car and bring up the live turkey.
Turkey? May I inquire of you gentlemen just what it is you intend to do?
Sure. Here's the picture. First, a few quick shots of you sitting at the table with the turkey. We'll put it in a few magazines and newspapers to get your name around.
Yes.
Then we go after the big spread. Wednesday we've got you booked to judge a most beautiful baby contest. You know, pictures of kids sprawling all over you. It's a little messy, but it's great for the out-of-town newspapers. It shows how Edwin Montague put the heart in Uncle Goodheart. Do you get it?
Yes.
Then we hack out a few stories for the columns. How radio took Edwin Montague, a little-known actor, out of obscurity and put him in the public eye. Things like that.
Yes.
Then we take you around since you are seen in all the best places. The roller derby, hockey games, maybe have you referee a little wrestling.
Yes.
Then we hit the fan magazines. Mr. and Mrs. Uncle Goodheart show marriage can be fun. Then hobby stuff. Pictures of you ski jumping, building a boat in a bottle.
Yes.
Then after that, some gag pictures. Go down to Stillman's gym and show you going a few rounds with Rocky Graziano. Horsing around with the showgirls at the Latin Quarter. You know, human interest.
Yes.
Well, that is just about the first phase of my campaign.
It is?
Yes.
Good. Now that you've shown what you're going to do for me, may I show you what I am going to do for you?
Okay.
Well, first, I am going to spit in your eye. Then I'm going to smash your camera tripod over your head. Then I'm going to lift your unconscious body, take it to the window, and drop it out. And then I'm going to rush downstairs in the hope that I arrive at the same time as your body. And then I will proceed to stamp out any signs of life that might still exist in your miserable, detestable carcass! And that, sir, will be the first phase in my campaign.
I don't understand.
Quiet! All you have to understand is this. One word, one syllable, one indication that Edwin Montague is in radio, and I shall track you down to the darkest corner of the pool room you are obviously living in.
Mr. Montague.
Out! Out!
Grab the camera, Harry.
Gads, that felt good.
Well, now that you've had your raw meat for the day, here is your coat. You've got to get to the studio to do your radio program.
Oh, Lily, give me one more chance. I'll do anything. A bit part. I'll carry a spear. I know, I'll go see the Schuberts right away. By tomorrow, I'll be on the road in the Student Prince. Drink, drink, drink to eyes that are bright as when the stars shine on me.
Edwin, here's your coat.
Lily, where's your heart? You who have played Portia in The Merchant of Venice, have you forgotten? The quality of mercy is not strained. It falleth as
it droppeth as the gentle rain.
It droppeth as the
Edwin, here is your coat.
There is no other way.
Here is your coat.
Thank you. Goodbye, Lily.
Goodbye, Edwin.
Hi-yo! Uncle Goodheart, away!
Holy moly, Ernie, what the heck is that?
Don't know, Frank. The way it came out of the sky like a meteor like that.
Hi, Earthlings, where am I?
You can't get there from here.
No, seriously, I'm lost. My GPS is out.
GPS?
Galactic Positioning System.
Oh, okay, sure. Well, you're on Earth.
Earth? You mean where all those weird broadcasts come from?
Broadcasts?
Yes, like Flipper, Maggie, and Polly, poor Miss Brooks, and Fun Smoke.
Like old-time radio shows?
Very much.
Oh, I see. Well, you can get them on the World Wide Web.
The what?
The Internet. Just use your browser and go to AmericanRadioTheater.org.
Whoa, too many concepts. Wally, you're recording this. Good. Oh, so it's www.AmericanRadioTheater.org.
Yep.
Well, thanks, I think. Look, I've got to get back up to orbit. Good luck, Earth beings.
And good luck to you.
Bye now.
Well, that was an odd interlude.
Yeah, I hope he can get his GPS fixed.
And now we return to the magnificent Montague. We find him just finishing up his Uncle Goodheart program. Let's listen.
Oh, Uncle Goodheart, what you have just told me made me realize that I've been a spoiled, selfish girl. I shall never doubt Ronald again.
Good.
Yes, thanks to you, Clarissa and I are going away to build a new life together in Pittsburgh.
Good.
We're leaving today.
Good.
Uncle Goodheart, will you come and live with us?
Yes, Uncle Goodheart, please.
No, my children. My place is here, in my little cottage on the sunny side of the lane, where I can help other weary wayfarers along the road to life.
And so ends another episode of Uncle Goodheart, brought to you by Shalimar Soap. And now, here's Uncle Goodheart with his thoughts for the day.
When the waves are high and the rain is hard, and the wintry breezes blow and a stranger stands in the teeth of the gale, won't you say,
hello?
Okay, Mr. Montague, we're off the air.
Oh, there must be a limit to what the human stomach can endure.
Mr. Montague, do you remember me?
Must I?
I'm Mr. Springer, the producer. You did it again. The sponsor was crazy about it. Ask Mr. Zinser, our director.
Oh, the switchboard is jammed with calls. I love you.
The sponsor wants a testimonial from you about Shalimar soap.
Oh, very well. Uncle Goodheart says that after each broadcast, he uses a cake of Shalimar soap to wash out his mouth.
Oh, Mr. Montague. But, Mr. Montague, you don't understand what you've done. You are a sensation.
I am.
Do you know what you have done to Aunt Agatha?
I warn you, I will deny it.
Listen to him, Zinser. Here you are on only the second program, and already you've stolen a million listeners away from Aunt Agatha. She's on the air at the same time, opposite you.
A million?
A million? You have 4 million listeners.
4 million listeners? You mean I talk into that perforated little box and 4 million people?
It will be 10 million before we are through. We will drag Aunt Agatha off the air.
10 million listeners? In my entire stage career, I played to standing room only, and I've never been heard by even 1 million people. And here in just 15 minutes, I was heard by 4 million people? Amazing! Simply amazing!
Oh, good morning, Edwin.
Good morning, Lily. I see you've got my orange juice and cornflakes ready. Yum, yum. I'm starved.
You go ahead, Edwin. I'm sorting your mail. Imagine, only 1 month on the air, and look. 500 letters alone this morning.
Amazing. Simply amazing. Oh, what's so funny, my dear?
This letter here from a lady in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Dear Uncle Goodheart, I'm in love with an unemployed paper hanger. My parents want me to marry the manager of a local grocery store. Dear Uncle Goodheart, what should I do? Marry for love or money?
Oh, what's so funny about that?
Oh, Edwin.
What is so funny about that? Just because a poor, confused young lady turns to the only person she has faith in,
The one voice on the air she feels is a friend.
Now, Edwin.
Lily, I am shocked at your callousness.
Edwin, I felt this coming on, but I was afraid to admit it even to myself. Edwin Montague, you are taking this Uncle Goodhart part seriously.
Lily, the whole thing seems to have escaped you. You don't seem to understand what has happened. I took a cold, shapeless character on a piece of paper and breathed life into it. I give it depth, understanding, sympathy.
Edwin, what's happened to you?
Lily, we are now living in a modern age. You must keep up with progress. I tell you, Lily, radio is the coming thing.
The coming thing.
Yes, and I thank my lucky stars that I had the foresight to get in on the bottom floor.
The bottom floor?
Please, the subject is now closed. Agnes?
Yes, Uncle?
Would you please be so kind as to remove that Saperoni soap from my bathroom?
Oh, now, Edwin, really,
must
aren't
the
you...
first thing that greets me every morning remind me of that Aunt Agatha?
Oh, no. You're not really starting in on Aunt Agatha again. Edwin, you're a huge success with 10 million enchanted listeners.
And Aunt Agatha went up to 11 million. 11 million drooling morons who would rather listen to that horrible creature than the first truly artistic program in radio, Uncle Goodhart.
Edwin!
Lily, I've never hated anyone before, but this character, this slacker, this tear-jerky female imbecile, well, she's corrupting the nation.
Edwin, I can't understand you.
Of course you can't, Lily. But of course it isn't your fault, Lily. You're cooped up in your office at the Women's Birdwatchers of America organization. You are out of touch with modern living.
Edwin, when I retired from the stage, joining the Women Birdwatchers of America gave me a new lease on life. You have your work, and I have mine.
I know. But if you could only see how radio works. Can't you just take this one afternoon off from your birdwatchers and see one of my broadcasts?
I can't, dear. Especially not now. The office is in an uproar.
An uproar?
The starlings are leaving for the South.
Well, let someone else wave goodbye to them.
I'm sorry, Edwin. Oh, I'll get it. Hello? Oh, one moment. Edwin, it's for you. It's Malone, the publicist.
Oh, give me that phone. Malone, you lying, despicable worm. Why wasn't Uncle Goodhart mentioned in Winchell's column this week?
I'm sorry, but you got bumped for Aunt Agatha.
I see. And where were those big newspaper breaks you said I'd get yesterday? Oh, wait a minute. Let me guess. Aunt Agatha.
I know, but Mr. Montague...
I dragged myself down to the local fish market at 4 o'clock in the morning to crown Miss Softshell Crab, and all I see in the papers are mentions of Aunt Agatha. Malone, get on the ball. Let's see some action.
Yes, Mr. Montague.
Not one line in the morning paper.
I know, but Edwin, all this publicity. What if the Proscenium Club finds out?
Oh, not a chance. It's all in the name of Uncle Goodhart. There are no pictures. I've taken every precaution I can think of. At Radio City, I use the freight elevator.
Well then, Edwin, I might as well show this letter to you now. It's from Jarvis, the president of the Proscenium Club.
Where is it? Oh, no. He wants to see me today. Lily, they couldn't have found out.
Good morning, Mr. Montague.
Good morning, Henry.
Let me take your coat, sir. You're getting to be quite a stranger here at the club. You're busy rehearsing a Shakespeare play, I presume.
Shakespeare? Well, not quite. Did Mr. Jarvis mention that he wanted to see me?
Oh, yes. He's expecting you. Mr. Jarvis? Mr. Montague is here.
Hello, Jarvis.
Montague et tu, Brute.
What's wrong?
I thought you'd be the last, Montague. The very last to betray the high ideals of the theater that we Prosceniums live for.
Oh, by golly, you mean, you know?
Yes.
How did you find out?
Guy Teasdale saw her.
Jarvis, I had to do it. I was broken. Her? Who's her?
Your wife, Lily.
What about Lily?
Montague, how could you permit her to be seen every afternoon with that renegade? That traitor to the theater, Cecil Banks?
Cecil Banks?
Yes! Why, only 10 minutes ago she was seen having a drink with him in a nondescript bar.
10 minutes ago? Why, that's ridiculous. Why, right at this moment, my wife is busy in the office of the Women Bird Watchers of America.
Are you sure?
Sure, I'm sure. In fact, I'll telephone her right now and let her talk with you. Where's the telephone book?
Right here, sir.
Ah, thank you, Henry. Let's see. Here we are. Women's Beagle Association. Women's Bowlers of Mounted. Ah, yeah, here we are. Women Bird Watchers of America. Can't believe it. At a bar with Cecil Banks.
Hello.
Hello, Women Bird Watchers of America. I'm a starling. I've just phoned to say goodbye.
What?
No, I'm joking. May I please speak to your recording secretary, Miss Lily Boehm, better known as Mrs. Edwin Montague?
Who?
You just heard me.
I'm sorry, sir, but there's no one here by that name.
What? Are you sure?
Yes, sir.
You mean that no one with either of those names has ever been associated with your organization?
Yes, sir. I've worked here for 7 years, and I've never met anyone with those names.
For 3 long years, it's been... Cecil Banks? The husband is always the last to know. I've been betrayed!
You know, Lily, you're acting awfully calm for a woman whose husband didn't come home last night. Certainly, you're in a very cheerful mood.
Oh, Henry called. Edwin stayed at the club last night. It's good to see him take an interest in the theater again. He was going overboard on Uncle Goodhart.
Now I'll get the door. Ah, here's Uncle now.
Good morning, Agnes. Lily.
Good morning, Edwin, darling.
Yeah, she sings.
Did you have a good sleep, sweetheart?
Sleep?
Agnes, would you make some more coffee?
Coffee?
All right, Edwin, what makes you so depressed? Were you snubbed by the young widow Brown? What's wrong?
Wrong? Wrong? Why, nothing at all. You must have had a big day at the office, what with the starlings and all.
Oh, yes, I couldn't even get out for lunch.
Oh, frailty, thy name is woman.
Edwin, for heaven's sake, what is upsetting you?
Sorry, my dear. It is rather old-fashioned of me in these modern times to show such emotion just because my wife has found another man.
Another man? Edwin, are you mad?
Mad! Mad! Oh, that these ears would fall off rather than hear her galling lies. These same ears that heard the real recording secretary of the Women Bird Watchers of America say that Mrs. Edwin Montague was never a member of their organization.
Oh, that. Well, you see, I go under the name of Lily Boehm.
Lily Boehm? Oh, grave, where is thy victory? Lily, stop lying. You've never been in that office.
But, Edwin...
And for 3 years, there's been another man.
Another man? Edwin...
Silence! Did you or did you not meet clandestinely yesterday at a cheap little bar with Cecil Banks?
It wasn't a cheap little bar.
Oh, the brazenness of it. The mean, tawdry aspect.
Edwin Montague, how dare you intimate a thing like that? Just because I happened to meet Cecil on the street and he bought me a drink.
Oh, be quiet. For the last 3 years, do you deny that you've been lying to me about where you've been every afternoon?
No.
Then do you deny that there is another man?
Yes.
Then explain those 3 years to me.
Edwin, don't ask me to.
I want the truth, Lily, for heaven's sake. What have you been doing every afternoon for the last 3 years?
All right, Edwin. You asked for it.
Well...
I'm Aunt Agatha.
Oh, no, Lily. Not that.
Yes.
Please, no. Say you've been seeing another man. Cecil... Cecil Banks. Any man, anything but Aunt Agatha. You can't be.
Yes, Edwin, I'm Aunt Agatha. But just for another 2 weeks.
Oh, the shame of it. What do you mean, just another 2 weeks?
Aunt Agatha is going off the air.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Why, what a shame. It was a good little program, and you did a wonderful job on it, sweetheart. But I don't understand giving up such a successful radio program.
Oh, they're not giving it up. We're going on television.
Oh, that's a smart move, smart move.
Yes, yes, I think so, too.
Great idea, great idea.
I know. Well, dear, that will leave you king of the afternoon airwaves.
Oh, so what? The main thing, darling, is that we're still together. Sweetheart.
Sweetheart.
That's my little Lily. I say, I'm hungry.
Agnes, make cornflakes for two.
Oh, and by the way, Lily.
Yes?
Could you explain one thing to me?
Yes, Edwin?
Just what is television?
And so closes tonight's program. Be sure and join us again next Friday. Same time, same station for another visit from the magnificent Montague, created and written by Nate Hiking. You've been listening to American Radio Theater's recreation of the magnificent Montague and the episode Aunt Agatha. The program was directed by Dan Schindler and produced by Joy Jackson. Greg Porter is Edwin Montague, a.k.a. Uncle Goodheart. Ivan Curry as Zinzer. Beverly Washburn as Agnes the Maid. In our cast, you also heard Mary Moore Campagna as Lily Boehm, Dave Leese as Malone, Dean T. Moody as Jarvis, Nick Richa as Mann, Mark Whitworth as Springer, Pat McNally as Henry, Karen Leese as Woman, Beth Schlansky as Engineer, and Magpie McLaurin as Secretary. The music was performed by Chad Rinney, and sound effects were handled by Marilyn Wilt and Linda Rasmussen. Engineering by Ken Leese. Aunt Agatha was originally broadcast on November 17th, 1950. And I'm your announcer, Barbara Goldman. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Yeah, Tonto always called the Lone Ranger Kemosabe.
Just what does Kemosabe mean?
It means he who picks up the check.
Oh, phew. Well, that lets me out.
We are all aware of that. Did you pick up my podcasts?
What podcasts?
The podcasts I asked you to pick up. It was on the to-do list. Where's the to-do list?
I don't know.
No podcasts and no to-do list. Have I got that right?
About the podcast. When I asked, the store said they don't carry them anymore. Here, they gave me a card.
For a good time call.
Wrong card. Try this one.
For a good podcast, go to AmericanRadioTheater.org.
Okay. What kind of podcasts do they have?
Now, turn the card over.
Experience interdimensional travel in a unique way. Horror, comedy, drama, recreations of lost radio shows. AmericanRadioTheater.org is your ticket to a new life in the off-world colonies. Solve ghoulish crimes. Tap dance with the stars. Travel to the East Pole. We want you to come with us. Pending handwriting analysis, of course.
Wow, that's weird.
Look, why don't you go online and check it out yourself? Doesn't cost anything, and I've already submitted a sample of your handwriting.
What sample?
The to-do list.
Let's listen to some music from the days of old-time radio.
Time now for Stars of Jazz, a program filled with the exciting and scintillating rhythms of America's own music. And the story of its colorful history is told by the well-known singer-composer and musician's musician, Bobby Troup. And now, here is Bobby Troup.
Good evening. Welcome again to Stars of Jazz. Our principal subject on tonight's program might be referred to as the Jazz King of Beards. The man behind the vibraphone... And behind the luxuriant reddish foliage is Mr. Kenneth Norville, lately known as Red Norbo, tonight's star of jazz. This gentleman, born by sheer coincidence in Beardstown, Illinois, is responsible single-handedly for the acceptance of the xylophone as a jazz instrument. And not content to rest on the laurels of this accomplishment, Red Norbo has constantly kept pace with changing styles in jazz. As a matter of fact, he has consistently set that pace. Augmenting Red's New Liberty recording group will be the fascinating vocal work of Miss Ann Weldon, a comer in the jazz singing art. To demonstrate at the outset that we are indeed Norvo Riche this evening, here is Red's exciting new group, and from his Liberty album, Vibrations, it's Sweet Georgia Brown. The xylophone is a member of the marimba family, and until not too long ago, the marimba family was to jazz possibly what the jukes family was to the rest of society. As a group, they were both interesting to consider, but no one really wanted to have too much to do with them. Around the turn of the century, the xylophone gained a fair degree of popularity in minstrel shows and in vaudeville. With mallets aforethought, xylophonists appear on the stage in wide rhinestone-studded sashes and slicked-down hair. They delighted audiences with tinkling renditions of such works as the Poet and Peasant Overture. And to make sure that ticket holders got their money's worth, young Kenneth Norville enhanced his act by accompanying his playing with a demonstration of the dance. Red Norville's brand of xylophone. Mr. Narvo's brand of xylophonics was very big on the Orpheum circuit, but it failed to satisfy him at all. It was the recorded music of King Oliver, Red Nichols, Errol Hines, and others of the early jazzmen which really caught Red's imagination. So Narvo quit the vaudeville circuit and cast in his lot with other young musicians who were being influenced by jazz, Gene Krupa, Wingy Minone, Bud Freeman, and Benny Goodman. In the years that followed, Red played with Victor Young, Paul Whiteman, and a series of bands that featured the top sidemen in jazz. Through his great musicianship, he made the xylophone an integral part of jazz. And throughout Red's career, spanning a quarter of a century, he has constantly gone onward and upward. He handily made the transition from xylophone to vibes. He's forever experimenting, expanding his musical thinking, and keeping abreast of what is new on the jazz scene. Just a short 6 years ago, Norvo adopted a trio format for his music, which was acclaimed for its subtlety and finesse. Lesser men would have been afraid to tamper with success, but not so with Mr. Norvo. Today, Red is typically being different. His new group, with the voicing of two flutes, an English horn, is as usual for Red, a true innovation. Just listen as they innovate, it could happen to you. Basic cliches of interviewing vocalists is the question, how did you get started as a singer? Well, in the case of Ann Weldon, tonight's vocal star of jazz, the answer is anything but trite. It seems that back home in Bakersfield, Ann's father taught music in a church choir. Ann was in the choir as a soprano, but when one of the bass singers among the boys didn't show up, Ann announced that she would fill in for him, and she did. This unusual vocal range served the church choir very well, and today it serves to produce some fascinating sounds in jazz. So, introducing Ann Weldon.
You make me feel so young. You make me feel so spring has sprung. And every time I see you, Gwen, I'm such a happy individual. The moment that you speak, I wanna go play hide and seek. I wanna go and bounce the moon just like a toy balloon. You and I running across a meadow, picking up lots of forget-me-nots. You make me feel so young. You make me feel there are songs to be sung, bells to be rung, and a wonderful fling to be flung. And even when I'm old and gray, I'm gonna feel the way I do today, 'cause you make me feel so young. You make me feel so young. You make me feel so spring has sprung. And every time I see you grin, I'm such a happy individual. The moment that you speak, I wanna go play hide and seek. I wanna go and bounce the moon just like a toy balloon. You and I are just like a couple of tops, running across a meadow, picking up lots of forget-me-nots. You make me feel so young. You make me feel there are songs to be sung, bells to be rung, and a wonderful fling to be flung. And even when I'm old and gray, I'm gonna feel the way I do today, 'cause you make me feel so young.
Well done, Weldon. You know, Anne, most of the vocalists that we've had on Stars of Jazz in the past have started out with big bands and then gone on to their own as singles. Now, you've done just the opposite. You've started out all by yourself as a single. Do you think you've missed the influence of a big band in back of you at all?
No. I think I might say I missed having a good, big, full band in back of me, but I don't think I've missed anything by not working with a band, because I think a band singer's ultimate aim is to become an individual, you know, and I think that they all work to work alone. They all want to sing on their own. I mean, working with the band, you would have to do what the band leader would say.
No, those wonderful road trips that you miss, all those one-nighters and
that's
things like that.
That's what I haven't missed at all.
You know, and Sarah Vaughan, just like you, started singing in a church. Do you think there's any kinship between church singing and jazz singing?
Yes, I do, very much so, because music, like any other art, is a projection of emotion, and I think religious songs and jazz are very much kin.
During Red Narvo's tenure with Paul Whiteman in the early 30s, the band featured a vocal trio called the Rhythm Boys, consisting of Harry Barris, Al Rinker, and Bing Crosby. Rinker's sister, Mildred, was the girl vocalist. She used the name Mildred Bailey, and with Red Narvo to inspire her, to accompany her, and at times to disconcert her, she was to become possibly the greatest female jazz singer of all time.
But it's hard to love someone when that someone don't love you. I'm so disgusted, downhearted too. I've got the downhearted blues. Once I was crazy about a man. He mistreated me all the time.
Mildred Bailey was a natural, effortless singer with a unique sense of jazz phrasing. Red Narvo, what kind of a person was Mildred Bailey, personally?
Well, she was a great person and a great artist, Bobby.
Wonderful. I certainly enjoyed her singing. It's one of the greatest of all times. You know, Red, you were the first, but I wonder if you could tell us some other instrumentalists who have, since you and along with you, gone on to contribute to the acceptance of the vibraphone, the xylophone, as kind of a member of the jazz family of instruments.
Well, there's Lionel Hampton, Terry Gibbs, Teddy Charles. There's a lot of them, a lot of great ones, a lot of really great ones.
You know, I'm thinking back many years ago, Red, when I first met you. This was back when you had that wonderful big band with those wonderfully subtle Eddie Sauter arrangements back in the late 1930s.
Yeah.
And you know, it makes me aware of the fact that many very famous jazzmen today really got their start with some of your organizations, your orchestras, your small groups, and so on. Why don't you tell us about some of those?
Well, let's see. You mean who started with the group?
Some of the men who started with your group.
Well, let's see. Dave Barbara, Herbie Hamer, Hank D'Amico, Bill Miller, who plays piano for Sinatra now, Let's see. Shorty Rogers, Eddie Burt, Flip Phillips, Ralph Burns, Tal Farlow, Charles Bingus.
Tal Farlow plays pretty good guitar.
Yeah.
Well, how about this new group now and your new Liberty album? What started this? Whose idea was this?
Well, it was my idea, more or less, in the fact that instruments don't so much. In other words, they're soft instruments, and if you ever played in a big band with a vibraphone or a bass or a guitar and tried to hear yourself, it got pretty cranny.
Brett, suppose you introduce some of the members of your band.
On here on the end is Jack Montrose on flute and tenor. On English horn, Bill Kaczynski. And on first flute, Bob Drasden. On guitar, Jimmy Wyable. On bass, Buddy Clark. And on drums, the great Bill Douglas.
And I suppose now we listen to them. It's the fascinating sounds of Red Narvo's new group, and they now undertake to lend their own new style to Gershwin's fascinating rhythm. Teddy Buckner and his Dixieland Band.
Listen again next week for Stars of Jazz, with America's own music and the story of its colorful history as told by that well-known singer-composer, Bobby Troup. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
That's all the time I've got for today. Please have a look at our website, AmericanRadioTheater.org, for more of our podcasts. You know, we put up a new one every month. Hey, see you next time!